make you sing and tap your little toes. Oh, oh, I wanna know.
Hi, everybody. This is Chantel Lopez, and I'm here with my co-host, Deborah Colway. Welcome to another episode of the Thinking Pilates podcast. Hey, Deborah.
Hi there, Chantel.
We are, technically, this is our third podcast in what we think is going to be just a three-part series around breakdowns and breakthroughs. And tonight we're going to be talking specifically about our relationship to self-care and self-practice, and how that relationship is indicative of creating space, or how we create space for ourselves. And we'll clarify that particular point in a bit. But this idea of how we are nurturing ourselves and how we're meeting ourselves in any given moment is really a reflection of how we will or can go through the intensity of a teacher training program, and also how we navigate the road ahead, our teaching journey ahead. So we, Deborah and I, have been in lots of conversation around this topic, and I think it's going to be really interesting and hopefully valuable, but we'll let you be the judge of that. What I'd love to do is have us jump in this place of self-care, self-practice, and maybe we'll just use those words interchangeably, or know that that's what we're kind of doing, and what our relationship to that does to foster space for us. And I want you to talk about it in the way that we've been talking about it, because I think it's really brilliant and it makes a lot of sense. So I'm going to let you dive into that to get started.
All right. Well, what I've been paying attention to, both in myself and the people around me, is the reactions that happen, and how we then feel about ourselves relative to, well, any situation, but the situations that come up around, I guess you could say, our feeling of confidence and self-worth or not self-worth as new teachers or anywhere along the path as teachers. And I've started to really try and track if, in fact, there's a relationship to this idea of how we do take care of ourselves beyond just eating well or getting enough sleep or making sure that our day, trying to make sure that our day isn't overwhelming, etc. We had talked in a previous podcast about support, you know, and finding support for ourselves in the different points along the path, whether it's in the program or beyond the program. And we spoke a little bit about how important it was to have a point person, somebody who we thought of as our teacher or mentor, or, you know, somebody with whom we had trust and felt comfortable. And I believe that absolutely. Then I just started to think about how the people that I've known who seem to have confidence and a kind of a sturdiness that keeps them going when there are obstacles or upsets, are the people who do a lot of their own practice. And I know we've talked about this too, the whole concept of self-practice. Even with regard to my clients over the years, I've noticed that the people who come to lessons and then go home and then come back and say, hey, you know, I tried this way, or is it okay if I do it this way, or what about using this prop, or they come in excited about the way that they've related the Pilates to things in their everyday life, this kind of thing. Those are the people that progress faster. Those are the people that seem to really, progress, you know. And then similarly, the people that I've noticed as students, the ones who are able to spend more time working through the material on their own and then coming back for the lessons and having the questions or, you know, being in the symposiums or what have you, they do seem to me to be the people that end up with, I don't know, like a reserve. It's a reserve of confidence. It's a reserve of experience. They are less apt to get confused or thrown by a variety of clients. And then, of course, as ongoing teacher, as teachers who are in the field for a long time, I feel like those are the kind of teachers that also bring the most and can handle a variety of situations and not get thrown off the horse, as it were. Mm-hmm. So I want to go back for a second with regard to the whole self-care, self-practice, breakdown, breakthrough, because what has led me into this talking with you about all this is that it's inevitable for there to come these moments of self-doubt. It's inevitable that we're going to bump into a situation that stumps us. Mm-hmm. And of course, we can go to somebody else and ask for advice or study a little more, but you know, we're always going to hit walls of confusion. We're always going to feel like we don't. There's always going to be times when maybe we feel like we don't know enough, stumped by a client with something that's different, getting into some kind of unfamiliar territory. But I think that the time that we've spent exploring and really getting into our own experience and using ourselves through that exploration is kind of like the petri dish. Is a very powerful thing to help us tolerate those moments of confusion, tolerate those times when we don't feel our best, like we're on the top of our game or whatever, because when we explore with ourselves and we take the time to do our own practice and we really get into it, we get into our own experience, our own feelings, and ask the questions from that place, we, again, I'm going to say the same thing, it's like we develop a tolerance for holding questions, for having questions, for actually not having to have the answers right away.
Yeah, and
being okay with taking time, and that is, I'm doing this in a pretty roundabout way, I'm sorry, but I feel like that is what really, that's what builds the confidence. And this issue of no space and speediness comes, I think, from this feeling of pressure that we have to know, like, we have to know right away. I have to have the answers right away. And it's unrealistic. It's, yes, you can teach the order, you can teach the method, but when you hit that wall of, I don't know what to do here, it doesn't have to be a problem. It's a problem if we panic, and we panic because, you know, we think that there's something wrong with us, we're not worthy, we don't have the right to be there teaching that person, when in fact, that same scenario could not be a problem mm-hmm. if our physiology and our nervous system was tuned to being okay hanging out in the space for a little while longer mm-hmm. and, you know, even being able to say, I really appreciate what you're going through. I feel like we can, you know, have this lesson, but I'm really going to have to do a little research or talk to your doctor or, you know, mm-hmm. I'm just making this up as I go, but yeah. You know what I'm driving at? It's this panic that sets in.
Yeah.
And I believe that the panic is a symptom of the speediness and the pressure that we feel in our lives because we don't have any space in our lives.
Yeah. Well, let me...
And it's actually physiological almost. It's in ourselves.
Well, yeah. I mean, certainly I feel like there's no separation, right, between the emotional, psychological, and physical experience often. That's all just so deeply intertwined. So I mean, it's a place to anchor. And then, of course, we're talking about physical practice, you know, and care, really nurturing as a way to cultivate this sense of space. And there's a couple of things that I'm thinking about, like I'm kind of interpreting what you're saying from my own experience, which I feel like that's probably what everybody that's ever listening to anything does, right? We take what we hear and then we interpret it based on what's relevant to us. And what resonates with me is that this sense of space, when there is space, there's self-reliance. I said, like, this is what space means to me when you're talking about it in this way in relationship to how self-care and self-practice cultivate space. It's self-reliance. It's ownership, right? It's personal responsibility. It's like a willingness to develop the person, to like develop myself as a human being, and to be compassionate. It's a willingness to be uncertain, which I think is a big, big issue, right, for many of us, is that there's so much fear and, as you said, you know, panic around not knowing. It's very difficult for us to be in that place of not knowing or be in that place of uncertainty. And ultimately, it's the difference between being responsive, which to me is spacious, right? It's open, it's willing, it's an ability to see that this doesn't mean that I don't have a lot of skill. It doesn't mean that I, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm lacking in skill or that I'm lacking in, you know, the tools that I need to be here. What it means is I have an opportunity to get really curious about this and to see where else this might take me as the teacher and the student. So it's, the space is like, it promotes responsiveness rather than reactivity, which is that panic driven anxiety, self-deprecating, self-doubt spin out.
Yep.
Right.
And the curiosity is the thing that one can build in the self-practice. It's not going to happen as much when you're waiting for the teacher or somebody else to tell you how it is all the time.
Absolutely.
You know, this thing of, you know, what it's like when you're teaching and you have clients who they're constantly saying to you, is that right?
Yeah.
Am I doing it right?
Right.
Is it right? And I've always thought, oh, what am I doing that's teaching them to have to ask me that all the time? How
yes.
can I teach them differently so that they tell me what's right.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so spending that time with ourselves in that place of curiosity and then being able to hold. There's a couple other great words you used, which I didn't write down fast enough. you know, to be able to hold something for a bit of time, you know, so that that's where the self-reliance comes, and I call it confidence. You know, it builds the base for the confidence.
Yeah.
And it's scary because we want to be sure, and it's not you said a willingness to, you know, be to train our to develop ourselves as a person and everything. It's also like a willingness to have compassion for ourselves in the sense that there's a tenderness and a care, like actually self-care in the sense that we are human beings who we're never going to have it all together. You know what I mean? It's like a sale, a used car salesman, you know, kind of feeling of I'm going to do the training program. I'm going to be done. It's all going to be okay. And then I'm going to go forth and be great.
Yeah.
Which is that's pretty tough stuff. And so the care, self-care, literally even like developing that kind of compassion for our own ups and downs such that we understand that that's whatever comes up for us is the exact kind of thing that's going to be coming up with our clients.
Yeah. Well, it's so...
You know, the curiosity and the... I think you really define space beautifully that way. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, and so, like, to draw it back to breakdowns and breakthroughs, which is, of course, just a very natural process of progress, right, and evolution and learning. I think it's so, in no way to say that we're trying to avoid that process, but really to be comfortable, right, or more comfortable in that process, and perhaps that the breakdown is less jarring than it might be. And we talked about, I think there are a couple of things that I'm kind of spinning with, but one thing is that when we are not in that place of having created space, when we are not spending time deliberately nurturing ourselves or provoking curiosity, there's no opportunity to cultivate care, right? Or compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what you and I have privately talked about is this idea of expectations. And I feel like that's relevant to this piece because expectations are fine, right? It's fine, but it's the utter attachment to meeting the expectation that it makes the breakdown so much more intense and so much more that throws us off center so far, right? And maybe even totally off track. When there's a gentleness around, I've had an to acknowledge like, my expectation was that this was going to be a certain way. And now I see that it's not a certain way. And so I'm going to be with it. That takes space. I'm going to correct course. That takes space, right? And space is cultivated through self-practice, self-care, right? Exploration, curiosity, all these things. So there's a chain reaction. There are all these things that lead
and the chain reaction too, like of the, this is also like what happens is that we don't realize we're in it. We're in the breakdown.
Yeah.
You want to call it, just to keep using the same word. And we're so quickly triggered that we do a series of things either in our mind or out loud quite quickly that then makes a whole bunch of other stuff show up.
Yeah.
And sometimes we can be pretty far, like you said, we're thrown off track, right? We're thrown off center. So we can be pretty far off to the side of the track, having gone miles down the road to the wrong town.
Yeah.
Before we even think to stop and say, wait a second.
Yeah.
What is happening here? And then we realize, there was an expectation that wasn't acknowledged or something that didn't quite line up.
Yeah.
And the problem, and that's to me the issue of speed and no space. Mm-hmm. Because it wouldn't be so terrible if we had the breakdown, right?
Right.
That would just be one thing.
Yeah.
That would be like, I took the wrong exit, I realized it, I got back on the highway going back the other way, and I fixed it. But because we're just running at such a high frequency, we go many, many exits down the highway.
Yeah.
You know, and say all kinds of thought things to ourselves about ourselves in the process.
Yeah.
And maybe even involve a whole lot of other people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, so by the time we get back on track, it's a much bigger thing, and then it's a much bigger deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's this ability to recognize sooner, I think, that makes the difference between this building of things as a problem versus, as you said, an opportunity. And, you know, these are like very, everyone uses this kind of language these days, but it's true, you know?
Well, it is true.
That's the choice,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as cliche as it might sound or overused, I mean, there's no escaping that one version of this is reactiveness, right? It's panic driven. It's assuming the worst. It's you know, it's like I said before, you know, it's self-deprecating. It's, I must have done something wrong. I haven't met the expectation. Well, it's like, versus being responsive, where there is time to see that, oh yes, life actually is a myriad of experiences. And it's not unreasonable to think that I would have one that I wasn't expecting, or that this would be different than what I was expecting, or that sometimes it's going to be great and sometimes it's going to feel like shit. It's like, you know.
Right. But it's kind of like, oh, I got on the reformer and I'm starting to do chest expansion and I forgot to change the springs.
Right.
And I either can't move the thing and I don't know what's wrong with me, or I start to fall on my face. And if I'm responsive, I can catch myself.
Yeah.
But if I'm not, I could hurt myself. You know, so that's like the analogy from a very physical.
Yeah. I really, really appreciated what you said about self-care, and compassion, and just this kind of acknowledgement that, you know, we're human and we're never going to be perfect. We're never going to meet every, you know, set expectation, whether the expectation is set by ourselves or by our culture or by our, you know, people in our lives, right? Because I feel like expectations are set by different people, different situations, and we have them, you know, on different levels. Some of them we're conscious of, some of them we've set ourselves, and some of them we're not conscious of. But regardless, you know, it's like this ease to be with the experience. And I think that you have mentioned, maybe in just our individual conversations or in a podcast, I can't remember, about the relationship to reality, right? That there is... reality is not meeting our expectation. There's this argument of it should be another
way.
Yeah,
what's actually happening?
Yeah.
Like the space between our expectation. Like I'm going to go do a workshop. You know, I sign up for a workshop. And I have an expectation that it will be a certain way, that I'm going to learn a certain thing. And then suddenly I find myself there, and what's actually happening isn't quite lining up. And so I, again, have a choice. I either can get all kinds of negative things, you know, or I can stay curious. I mean, it's over and over. It's how you describe it. And it's having the space. If I'm in this kind of perpetual, sped up, place where everything is so important and I've got to get it all lined up just right so I can do the next thing, etc., etc., I can't handle the fact that maybe this was the one workshop that I thought I was going to sign up for this year and I'm spending my only $400, you know, whatever it is, and oh my God, it's not delivering. That is a very, you know, you can feel that, right?
Yeah.
But if the life that we learn to lead is not that way, then there's the potential for some positive thing to come out of this situation.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not making a comment on some people having $400 and some people not having the $400. I'm just talking about the situation of, you know, using an analogy of, you know, these kinds of expectations that get us in trouble when we find that then what's actually happening in the moment is not lining up. And if we have space, then there can be a relationship made. Those two can come together.
Yeah.
The two realities can come together. Yeah. My expectations and what's actually happening, as opposed to them having to be at odds with each other.
Well, I think you said there is something really pivotal to me that you said, that I feel like if we're going to draw these, let's draw the connection, right? It's like, okay, the reality of life is that it is fraught with ups and downs. And for one, if we have an expectation that it's always going to be a way, one way, particular way, the way we want it, then we're starting out setting ourselves up for disappointment and very much, you know, maybe not being able to handle it well. One way that we can prepare for that is to take time to care for ourselves in this way that we're talking about, in terms of self-compassion. And then in relationship to the Pilates practice and our teaching is to practice the work ourselves, which in yeah. that environment, it's the specific opportunity to get curious and to be with the experience just as it is, because there's rarely anything else like the physical experience to get us really sharply aware of what's happening, right? There's not a whole lot of hemming and hawing or gray area when it comes to like, oh, this either feels good or it doesn't feel good, right? So I feel like that's what we're trying to draw the connection and the power of self-care and self-practice to, creating space. And for me, the thing
that... training ourselves to be able to recognize, I'm sorry to interrupt, but actually that's a process too.
Right, to the awareness.
Many people don't know how to recognize what feels good or what doesn't feel good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you know, just to piggyback on that point, something you said earlier, which is if we're constantly either telling ourselves what the experience should be like, or what we as teachers get very good at is telling the student what the experience should be like, rather uh-huh. than getting them to evoke their own understanding of the experience, uh-huh. the self-inquiry of what does that feel like? Does that feel like the good, the right thing? Does that feel like the right spring tension, yada, yada, whatever, right? Turning uh-huh. that to me is, as a teacher, one of my responsibilities is to cultivate that awareness in the student, right? Not to be constantly telling the student what they should be doing.
Yeah.
So, but
right.
but
the whole concept of student-centered versus directed,
right? Exactly.
Style.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's a process too, because, like I said, our culture. This is a whole other conversation. Don't get me started. our culture doesn't help train us
right
for that kind of thing. We, again, you know, it's like coming back full circle. Many, many people come to us with absolutely no desire or no perceived desire to know these things.
Right.
They just want to be led, and that's not a critical thing. It's just the way it is, and that takes time too. Over time, people develop a curiosity. It doesn't happen naturally. So, you know, again, I'm a little off track here, but that's where the form is valuable. That's where the method is valuable, because it does give us a structure within which to start playing around with some of these little, a bit more elusive kinds of concepts.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't just kind of pop out of nowhere.
Right, right.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the one thing that you said that I think might, it, to me, is so powerful is that your example of showing up for the workshop that I think is choice, right? It's either, it's the acknowledgement of it's meeting my expectations or not. And for many of us, there's no space for choice, right? There's no space to go, oh, yes, this is not what I thought. This feels a bit disappointing. Oh, that's interesting. I can either get really upset about that. I could storm out. I could, you know, write a bad review, whatever I might be thinking I could
right.
do to get, you know, back, you know, retribution for not meeting my expectation. Or I could have the space to actually choose to stay open and to stay curious and to see what there is in it for me. You know, what's going to be unexpected, right? And get kind of, you know, excited about that. But so... Ultimately, I don't know, there's something about having the capacity for that choice is ultimately linked to space for me in terms of what we're
yeah.
talking about. So,
yeah.
you know, and as we go along through our, you know, our careers as teachers, you know, we are confronted with those moments where we have to choose to stay present and to stay open or, you know, or we don't. And then, as you said
yeah.
before, when that happens, we often make, you know, a mountain out of a molehill kind of thing. Being
yes, and then, you know, because I know we're going to be wrapping this up soon. It's like, and then what do we do with that? You see, that's the next thing. It's like, aha, all right, here I am again. And this is again. You know, I'm 5 exits down the road. Okay, I'm going to miss the meeting or whatever it is, you know. What do I want to do right now? Do I want to then start a whole other mess of beating myself up about it? Because I thought I had learned that. I thought I had gotten better at my whole relationship with expectations. I thought I was giving myself more space, you know. So that's another rotten hole we can fall into, you know. Once we start committing to, it's almost more upsetting, you know, when you feel like you fall off the wagon. So,
well, yeah, and
just got to get up again, you know. Yeah. Just, okay. Because that's the same thing, you know, that we're meeting ourselves in every client, in every class. We're all doing the same thing.
Well, I think, you know, perhaps this is the perfect point to bring it back completely to the beginning, which is that even in that situation that you're describing, you know, we thought we were doing better, we thought we were progressing, and yet we find ourselves in the same place. In that moment, we can still choose, right?
Yes, exactly.
And that's practice, right? I mean, that ultimately, that's what it is. That's what it is to practice, is that we make a choice to show up in that moment, even if it's not the moment that we wanted to show up in, right?
Right.
And so it's like there's this parallel between that, and that's also what we do with the physical practice. So one supports the other. We show up every time, you know, Wednesday at 2:30, you know, whatever it is, the day and time, we set our physical practice and we show up again and again, no matter what it's like. And it's that choice to show up, and it feels like it's just the same thing, because it's ultimately just all a practice. And sometimes sometimes we're doing it, and sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're doing it, and
sometimes
we're not.
Sometimes we can't get there at Wednesday at 2:30,
right?
You know, because the baby's sick, right?
Right.
And so, or the car broke down, or something, and so then you. And there's other choices to be made in that moment. I mean, yeah.
Well, great. Good. Yeah. I mean, it's good. It's really great. So my hope, and I think probably your hope too, would be that, not perhaps necessarily beating this topic to death, but, in our subsequent podcast to be in discussion with a teacher who is interested or willing to share their experience with this, who is a bit further down the line in their teaching career. So we invite you to get in touch with us and let us know if you would like to be that person, because we would love it to be you, and to chat with you about this. And you can contact us at thinkingpilatespodcast@gmail.com. And that's, I think, going to be a wrap for us for tonight. Thanks again, Deborah. And
thank you, Cynthia.
I hope
pretty fun conversation.
Yeah, it's really great. It's really great, and I hope it was interesting and helpful to those of you who are listening, and that you pass it on. All right, that's it for now.
Okay.
All the things that make you sing and tap your little toes.